It's February 10th, 2015. This is the Joint Committee on Ways and Means Subcommittee on Natural Resources. We're going to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 5512. First up to testify, we're going to call up Richard Whitman and Travis Miller. You guys just want to state your name for the record, and we'll get going.
Co-Chair Rayfield, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Travis Miller with the Chief Financial Office, and I'm here with Richard Whitman, Governor's Natural Resource Policy Advisor, to present the 2015-17 budget for DOGAMI, Department of Geology and Mineral Industries.
Good morning, Chair Rayfield and members.
Good morning.
All right. Chair Rayfield, members of the committee, again for the record, Richard Whitman, Governor Kitzhaber's Natural Resources Advisor. I'm here today just to give you an overview of some major issues relating to the agency and also to make sure you understand the relationship between this agency and some of its programs and other agency programs and the role that it plays in the broader context. So DOGAMI, as you heard yesterday from Director McConnell, element one of its programs is the science program, and it is a key science advisor to a number of agencies, both natural resource agencies, other proprietary agencies like our Department of Transportation, to local government and others in terms of a host of science issues. As you know, Governor Kitzhaber proposed a one-year budget for the department, and I'm going to come back and talk about why that is in just a moment. But if you take the governor's recommended budget on a two-year basis, the governor was actually proposing to nearly double the investment in the department. And specifically in terms of policy option packages that the governor would fund for the agency. First of all, LIDAR. So LIDAR, I think you probably heard yesterday, is a technology that allows us to see things like where earth movement is, where vegetation is growing and not growing. It's used for a whole host of purposes by a number of agencies. So the governor proposed investing $500,000 in LIDAR acquisition specifically to support the Clean Water Partnership, and that's a governor's initiative that I introduced to this committee when we did an overview that's aimed at providing the tools to agencies to make sure we're investing our limited public dollars wisely in terms of improving water quality. So LIDAR is a key part of that, and that was the first piece that the governor proposed be funded. The governor also proposed another $500,000 in funding for LIDAR to really stabilize the agency's science program and give them the base to go out and seek, to have matching funds to go out and seek other opportunities to provide their technical services on a contract basis or grant basis to other entities. The next package was with regard to flood hazard. There would be funding of the agency's proposed flood hazard assessment program. DOGAMI has been a major player in terms of improving our flood mapping, working with the federal government, the Federal Emergency Management Agency, FEMA, which leads the flood insurance program, as well as the Department of Land Conservation and Development. You're going to hear issues related to that program later on in the year. We've got some flood insurance issues around the state, but we propose putting some additional money into that program. And then the earthquake hazard mitigation program, about three-quarters of $1 million in general fund, largely for purchase. We have an opportunity to purchase some seismometers that have been used by a federal agency that would give us a network here in the state. I suspect you heard some about that yesterday. And then finally, landslide hazard mitigation. This is Again, a proposed investment of general fund dollars to stabilize the technical expertise in that program, recognizing that this is a area of some policy priority to many members, as well as the governor, because of some of what we've seen in our neighbor to the north in the state of Washington with the landslide there. So those are some of the key pieces from the governor's perspective for this agency. So let me come back to talk about the issue of a one-year budget versus a two-year budget for just a moment. Actually, if you could go to that slide. And actually I have another handout for the committee that is a slightly different version of this. So I'm going to give you just a moment to take a look at this, and then I want to talk about this table, this graph that I've handed out. So this graph shows the period from 2003-2005 up through the coming biennium of 15-17, and if you look at it in focus on the blue and the yellow bars, this is really getting to why the governor feels there's a need to address the long-term funding model for this agency. The blue is federal funds, and you'll see that the department has done a pretty good job of seeking and obtaining federal funds largely for its science programs over the years. But in 15-17 projected, there's a projected fairly significant decrease in federal funding to the agency. That's one problem. The other issue is the decrease in terms of current service level for other funds. These are the project dollars that come into the agency for its LIDAR work and other flood hazard work, its other work. Because the agency has really been pushed largely off of general funds and onto a combination of federal funds and other funds that it obtains through being entrepreneurial, it's subject to quite a bit of variability in its budget. At the same time, this agency, in terms of the people in the agency, particularly on the science side, includes some fairly highly skilled technical folks who analyze things like LIDAR and other scientific information, who have a lot of expertise and who, frankly, are quite marketable in the private sector. So having the uncertainty of funding long-term in the agency is creating a real challenge for this agency in terms of being able to hold on to the technical expertise that is really a core part of what they do and the value that they add to the state and to the private sector and to local government. So for this coming biennium, the governor proposed, as I said at the outset, a fairly significant reinvestment of general fund dollars into the agency. That helps, or would help, stabilize the situation for this current biennium, but it really doesn't fix the long-term issue of how does the legislature, how does the executive branch want this agency to operate? To what degree is it reasonable to have it be a entrepreneurial project shop type of operation as opposed to having some core that is funded on a more stable basis. So the governor proposed the one-year budget really for the purpose of, if you will, encouraging this discussion about what's the long-term funding model for this agency. It does not reflect a lack of support for the agency. The governor believes strongly in the importance of the functions and the missions that the agency has, both on the science side and on the regulatory side, and has no intention of supporting any diminishment of support for those programs. But we need some work on this agency's funding model long term. In discussions with you, Chair Rayfield, have started to work on some proposed budget note language that could be combined with a two-year budget for the agency. We're perfectly fine with that approach rather than having a one-year budget. But I will note, timing-wise, that because of the uncertainty for staff in the agency, created by the instability of funding and the unfortunate coincidence of other events, it's going to be important to work through these issues fairly quickly and provide some clarity to the agency and all of the interests that rely on the agency, that have an interest in the agency, to hopefully get to some suggestions for the 2016 legislature and come back and revisit this issue then. But that said, the governor is fine with the two-year budget for this agency. Again, the reason for a one-year budget proposal was to underline the importance of looking at this carefully, the funding model. So with that, I'd be pleased to answer any questions that you might have.
Actually, Mr. Whitten, I did have one question. When I was looking through the policy option packages and based on the testimony today, if the initial budget was for 1 year, were you actually proposing to double the cost of the policy option packages? So, for instance, the $1 million, the $5 million total for LIDAR would be then be two in from general fund, eight from other funds.
I'll take that. Co-Chair Rayfield, members of the committee. No, it would not double the value of the policy option packages. And also, it's not exactly a halving of the budget because we maintain the $670,000 for capital outlay. So all of that is front-loaded in the first year of the biennium.
All right.
Thank you. I appreciate the opportunity to be here.
And
I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman, I had stepped outside and I wasn't sure where we were in the process this morning. This is a good opportunity to ask Mr. Whitman some questions.
Absolutely.
All right, thank you. Thank you very much, Gomber. Mr. Whitman.
Perfect timing.
I'm trying to think of the appropriate way to phrase this, sir. You'll recall my district on the Central Oregon coast.
Yes.
This body is in the process of reviewing some important and significant decisions. And information from various agencies is important to us as we as those decisions evolve. Do you think it's appropriate for that information to be provided in a public forum such as guest opinions in the Oregonian before it is presented to the body here?
Co-Chair Rayfield, Representative Gomberg, I suspect you're referring to a couple of letters from the director regarding a couple of issues related to largely tsunami hazards on the Oregon coast. And my belief on those letters is this really illustrates part of the importance of having an independent science expertise in the state of Oregon to provide, almost unvarnished information regarding risk. I think if you were to ask the director about this, she would tell you that she is very, and she's told me in conversations, she's very cognizant of the realities of those two particular situations and the limitations that the folks who are working on those particular projects face in terms of ability to locate or engineer solutions. So I think, though, that again, just like the governor proposed, a one-year budget is sort of making a statement to make sure we get people's attention. I think the same sort of thing is important for the state geologist and the department to have the independence in the science expertise to make sure that policymakers such as this body and such as local government bodies and such as the others understand that the risk that decisions involve. That's not to say that the decisions are wrong. They may very well be the right decisions, but we should make sure that they're well considered.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a comment. I agree that certainly we want our decisions to be well considered. I would just say that in the future, I'd appreciate having some of that information shared with me in my decision-making process before I read about it in the newspaper.
Co-Chair Rayfield, Representative Gomberg, I completely agree.
Thank you, sir.
All right. Any other questions? Senator Dimbrough.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Actually, Richard, I'm not sure this is really a question for you, and I don't know if the director is going to come back up, but it's, you know, this question of basing the funding on projects versus the stability of general fund, that this is a mix that I would assume that all the geological surveys, all the states have to deal with. And I'm just wondering where other states are coming down on this, if we're sort of on the cutting edge in terms of relying on, you know, user fees, projects, that sort of thing, or, you know, if other states have, you know, are moving in that direction, or they remain more dependent on a sort of stable general fund allocation.
So, Co-Chair Rayfield, Senator Denborough, I'll take a very quick crack at that, and then I think that the director is probably better positioned to answer. But the main point I would make is this is one of the things we would like to look at as we examine what's the best way, what's the best business model for this agency going forward. My impression is that the state of Oregon has is relying more on the project model than most other states, but I'll leave it to the director to comment on that as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and don't get me wrong, I appreciate the project model and really appreciate the work that the agency has done to be creative and entrepreneurial. But, you know, I think we can see pretty clearly that there's also a need for stability given the responsibilities that we invest this agency with.
All right, any other questions?
Thank you.
Okay, and Mr. Miller, would you like to, I think you were going to follow up?
More, Co-Chair Rayfield, members of the committee. Just to sum up, just for purposes of thoroughness, the governor's recommended budget is $8.7 million. That's the one-year budget, total funds. Also, I think because current service level was mentioned, I'll go ahead and note that from the standpoint of a two-year budget, this would be a 70% increase over CSL. So this is a substantial investment. With the reduction in federal funding, the agency was essentially looking at a loss of $4 million, $3 million of that in other funds, $1 million in general fund, as well as the loss of 11.04 FTE. So a substantial reduction and a major investment.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
We'll go ahead and call up Peggy Lynch.
Mr. Co-Chair, members of the committee, thank you for indulging me. I have another meeting to go to over at Business Oregon, so I appreciate the opportunity. Peggy Lynch, League of Women Voters of Oregon. I have provided you with written testimony because it was done late last night. Normally, I will try to make sure that it gets on OLIS so you don't have pieces of paper. The League of Women Voters is a nonpartisan grassroots political organization that encourages informed and active participation in government, and you will see many of us around the Capitol talking about many things. We have adopted a position on hazards in 1995, and I've provided you with a portion of that. We believe that all levels of government share in the responsibility of coordinating, implementing, and funding an effective program to mitigate Oregon's earthquake and tsunami hazards. Priority must be given to mitigation that protects human life and safeguards critical life support systems. And geological reports identifying property at risk should be on file and accessible to the public. Property that poses extreme hazards should be designated as unbuildable. We also have strong positions in support of our land use planning program, of which Goal 7, Natural Hazards, is an important element. And Representative Clem, who's not here today, will hear from us on Thursday as we support rulemaking by DLCD. And you will see that we support Dogami's scientific information, particularly with LIDAR. I will not read through the whole thing. We continue to support funding for data collection in all natural resource agencies because good, accurate scientific data saves public monies and provides good public and private planning and investments. That's critical. I served on the Integrated Water Resources Strategy. We use Dogami data in order to do that work. I was pleased to hear Director Whitman's, or excuse me, policy advisor. I've known him too long. Mr. Whitman's comments today, because I did mention yesterday, I noticed that Director McConnell said that healthy environment and jobs and economy were the issues that this budget goes under in the 10-year plan. But we do believe, and as we saw with Richard Whitman's comments, that public safety plays a significant role in this department. As small as this agency is, it is critical to the public safety of Oregon. And then one last thing I have to say, because Rich Engstrom is here. The League also supports efficiencies and streamlining of permitting processes, so long as environmental protections are factored into the final decisions. We believe that public policymakers such as yourselves provide guidance to the agency to provide both industry development opportunities and protection for Oregon's environment. Thank you. Questions?
Any questions? Thank you, Ms. Lynch.
Thank you for your indulgence. I have to step out.
Not a problem. Let's go ahead and bring Director McConnell back up just for a few questions. Thank you, Director. I think some of the questions that Senator Denbrough had is kind of the relationship between the private model that you're engaging in and then being able to serve a public good. And maybe the part of the problem, as I see with a private model, is you're only focusing in areas where you're getting the private investment or the partnerships, which when we're trying to serve a public good and we're trying to, you know, look at all the various areas, that kind of really focuses where you're doing your work. I mean, so I'd like you to just talk maybe a little bit about that and what do you see as an optimal model for Dogami going forward with that?
Great. Thank you, Co-Chair Rayfield, or Chair Rayfield today, I guess. For the record, my name is Vicki McConnell, and I'm the director of the Department of Geology and Mineral Industries. So I'd like to, if with your indulgence, go back to one of the other questions that Senator Denbrough had about other agencies, other state geological surveys, and I won't go into all the detail. I do think that we really do need to look across the board. But what we see, there's 48 states that have state geologic surveys, and they run the gamut from independent executive level agencies like we are, to deeply embedded in a university system, to being part of a DNR or environmental, you know, group, an ecological environmental group, and being a department or a division within it. So there's different models even in the structure and the governance of them. And then they run the gamut of size from basically a one- or two-person shop to very large entities, Texas and Illinois and California being the largest, with hundreds of employees and a major department within the system. So we have a lot of models to choose from there. Where Dogami in Oregon sits is, if you would think of it as a chart from very small here to very big up here, we're about in the kind of upper middle. Our size is higher than the average, and we have one of the most diversified funding models right now, with some general fund, other fund, fee funds, and a pretty healthy portfolio of federal funding. So I do think it's a good idea to look at these other models and see what's the pluses and minuses on them. I think that our model works well with the diversified funding and an enterprise entrepreneurial project part of the portfolio. What I suggest that we really consider is how to develop some of these programs into, as I was saying yesterday, something that's more comprehensive and for the ability of the state to have a say in the prioritization, which we really don't have that much of now. As you were saying, Chair Rayfield, we respond, we're reactive, we're not particularly proactive. And so the idea would be to find a way to allow enough structural investment by the state to develop those comprehensive programs, but still looking at project basis of other entities being able to come forward with matching funds or leverage funds and project areas that would be important for the state to consider. I hope that helps with that.
It does. It does. Are there any questions?
Just if I could follow up. The advantage, not that I would want to see us move to GAMI into a university, but you know, one advantage of that model is that there's a kind of stability there, right? And you know, when you have research universities, to a large extent, the scientists have to bring in grants, you know, to fund their operations. But there's a life between grants, and there's a kind of infrastructure that allows them to keep doing their work mm-hmm. while they're waiting for another grant to come in. I think it makes sense for us to try to find a model that emulates that, you know, while still having this be very much, you know, I think a state agency or part of a state agency. You know, one of the things that you and I have talked about, the Environment Committee has submitted a committee bill asking a task force to look at perhaps creating a Department of Natural Resources model for Oregon, and, you know, the advantages, disadvantages, et cetera. Right. Unfortunately, you won't be around to advise us on that, but something along those lines could help to provide the sort of solid infrastructure for this.
Chair Rayfield and Senator Nimbro and committee members, certainly, and with that, there as that task force or the consideration of developing that task force goes forward, there are other models in there. Maybe it's a mini DNR. Maybe it's there are several ideas that are out there that should certainly be explored. And one thing that I would advise and caution on when you're thinking about other structural ways to get the service for the people done is don't base it on saving money necessarily. I mean, it's always good to have efficiencies and to save money, but really think about what is that structure and how can we serve the state the best. And it's not always saving money, because it doesn't always work that way.
So. Representative Gomberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Director McConnell, I just wanted to say that I understand in recent days your department has suffered some unfortunate losses, and this committee is aware of that. I wanted to share with you our condolences, and that you, your employees, and their families are in our thoughts.
Chair Rayfield, Representative Gomberg, and committee members, we very much appreciate that. It's been a difficult week and a half, and I really appreciate your thoughts, and I know that Tom's family appreciates those as well. Thank you.
Thank you, Director McConnell. I appreciate your time. We'll go ahead and call up Rich Angston and Jerry Schmidt.
Good morning. My name's Rich Angstrom. I'm the president of the Oregon Concrete and Aggregate Producers Association. I represent most of the construction materials industries in the state, asphalt, concrete, cement, all of those kinds of things, and aggregate. But I've also picked up this last year, OCAP expanded its membership base to other mineral interests. So we've picked up the Eastern Oregon Mining Association folks, some gold miners, EP Minerals, which is a diatomaceous earth. Obviously, we have Ash Grove that we represent from the mining aspects. So we broadened our membership base and speak pretty much now, I think, for most of the mining community in the state of Oregon. In fact, I'm pretty much the mining lobbyist, I would say, in the state. I'd like to start my testimony, though. This is my 18th year at OCAPA, and I've seen now, I believe, three directors for the department. And Vicki's been obviously the one that has served the longest. And from the industry's perspective, I wanted to just communicate to the committee how fortunate we are to have this level of talent and commitment as an agency director, not only just, you know, governing the day-to-day operations, helping us on the mine and mineral-related issues, but just clear communications with you folks. I can tell you that our folks really find her to be one of the most detailed, knows the issues very intimately, and is one of the most straightforward individuals you'll meet in state government. She has, and I speak for our entire membership, earned a great deal of respect from the mining industry and that she regulates. And, you know, we're moving that chapter on, which is an opportunity for her. She takes on a nonprofit with the Geologic Society, and the industry really wishes her the best. She's just been terrific and a real asset to this state. So I wanted to begin my comments with that from the industry perspective, how just how fortunate we have been. The one thing I would say is on the Dogami budget specifically, is this is a small agency that does a lot. And I speak from a perspective of watching a staff of 11 over at the MLR, the Program 2 division. Am I speaking too loudly?
It's really sensitive.
Okay. I have a booming voice. The MLR program obviously is the regulatory arm that deals with the aggregate industry and the gold folks and, gas, natural gas, and other kinds of things. That agency, there's about 900 permitted mines, and they get out to the sites pretty frequently. In fact, I was looking at the data, and I'd like to stress that the five field staff of those 900 are hitting about half, just a little more than half of those sites on the inspections every year. That's not all of the permitting activity that they do, which takes a great deal of time. Those of us in Oregon, especially on the east side, with Senator Hansel would probably know this, knows how long it takes to get mine sites through. Calico is a new gold mine site, which is one of the first ones that will be permitted in my entire career here for other minerals besides the aggregate. And that's a big deal, but it's taken now a number of years, and it's taken a lot of the attention of the old assistant director. So from a perspective of what this agency does and what they bring is pretty incredible, and it's really noteworthy from our side to watch these men and women at the MLR program really bust their hump out there in the field and doing good quality work and helping us get through things. They've also pushed the envelope with agreements with other state agencies to help streamline the activity within the MLR. For instance, with the NDEQ, we have to get a 1200A permit, and they now administer that instead of DEQ. That's saved both time and money, and we actually have a better program that's what's required because in that case, those sites are inspected fairly frequently, how we manage our stormwater runoff. So you can't say enough about a small agency like this. We are pleased, and we had been hearing even from the industry's perspective how unnerving the one-year budget was. There's talented people on both sides of this program, and I was really worried that there would be a mass exodus of talent. And right into the time where we're trying to expand mining opportunities around the state, One of the things I would say on the fees for the MLR program is we set these a number of years ago, and I can't, I'm getting old enough, I'm over 50 now, or all the brain cells don't always fire, so I can't pull the name, the date exactly out of my brain. But what I would say is we did set those fees a number of years ago at a rate that allowed Dogami that was higher than what their actual costs were. And that money was supposed to sit aside. And then as the economy peaks and flows, and with our industry, because it's production-based, the fee's production-based, and it's just like our industry, you have peaks and then you have declines in the economy. And Dogami's MLR program fee structure would follow those peaks and valleys of the economy. And we set it a little high, so we had that reserve so that during the down periods, we can maintain that same level of service for the department. Now, I believe, based on some of the comments and some of the information I read here, it's probably time to relook at that and make sure we have those numbers set at the right level. But the one thing I would just caution is one of the big scares right after we did this, is we actually had a big pot of money, is the co-chairs in the worst part of the state budget cycle was interested in collecting all of these pots of money that were out there. And fortunately, I think we were able to preserve our pot of money within Dogami, and it didn't get what we call raided, no offense, but that's at the time what we were calling it, because we really had an important purpose to maintain that level of service. There's a huge commitment by our membership to support this MLR program. Now, I want to talk about opportunity, if I might, because I'm going to be very involved in the strategic plan and where this department goes. We just finished a mining conference symposium in Eastern Oregon, run by Cliff Bentz and the Eastern Oregon Mining Association and the Baker Economic Development Commission. We had a broad range of commissioners come in and be present. We had 103 miners there. We had county planners. And what came out of that particular symposium was the opportunity over on the east side, especially, for mineral exploration and opportunities. We've been talking, as I picked up these new duties, to big mining companies around the country. And there's a pretty strong sense that Oregon is not open for mineral extraction, so they didn't even bother coming to the state anymore to look. Hence, in my 18 years, we've now just have the first one that's actually trying to explore. We think it's a huge opportunity for the Eastern Oregon counties, especially Malheur and Harney counties, which very similarly have the same geology of Nevada. And what's interesting, and this is very important, what's interesting is you just go across the border at Humboldt, and it's one of the most happening counties as far as growth in the country. And the graphics that we put together using state and other data, we hired an economist to lay all this out at the symposium, was the only difference between the counties wasn't that they weren't ranching and farming still, but Humboldt had an active mining component where they were getting the minerals. And that was the one difference that boosted the economies of Humboldt County versus what was going on the Oregon side. And if you look at these, it's an awful graphic looking at what's going on in those Eastern Oregon counties as far as economic opportunity. And I know that this state's very sensitive about mining and the environmental issues that are associated with it, and just how we see, how the state's evolved. But I would remind just this committee that things are either grown or mined. Just look around you. But the second thing is we're family wage jobs. The jobs that miners bring are family wage jobs. They are not minimum wage jobs. We don't even get in that. Well, I'm not even involved in that debate, because we don't pay people minimum wage. We want high-skilled labor force that is trained, and then we want to keep them. And we want them to have their families growing up in the communities. And I'll say this, just running a ready-mix truck from that side of it, it's not like jumping in and grabbing a CDL and going delivering material. You have to know how to handle the admixtures in there, the water content, the delivery is special. These people are highly trained. We want to keep them. And
So the point is that I'd like to talk to you about is one of the opportunities that we should be looking at down the road for Dogami, and that came out of the symposium, is how we use Dogami to start to look at developing or mapping or demonstrating where other mineral resources are in those eastern Oregon counties. We had an old Dogami employee by the name of Mark Ferns testify or give a presentation, I should say, is a better way to say it. That's the old attorney in me. do a presentation at this symposium. And he went through the graphics that are already in the record at Dogami and talked about significant cement limestone deposits, talc deposits, diatomaceous earth deposits, rare earth deposits, chromium deposits. It was amazing. And then I asked him one question. Have we even hit, have we exhausted the investigation of what's out there? And he said, we haven't even scratched the surface what's available to Oregon. So one of the things I think of that as we talk about the strategic plan and moving forward, the industry is going to want to talk about is how we can get Dogami to start advocating for some of these things. And I'll bring the industry along to help support that. And so that's going to be some of the things we're going to be bringing to help out on the budget issues and create some economic opportunity in the state of Oregon. So I know that's, by the way, that's probably the longest speech I've ever given in a Ways and Means hearing. But I would say this is Program 1, there's the opportunity in Program 1. Program 2 should be self-sustaining with the fees. But Program 1 needs to evolve to support mining industry across the state. And there are several places within their budget that I already looked that can easily be oriented in a way that our fee-based structure from the MLR program can support it. And that's what I'll be bringing to the table as we talk about the strategic plan. It'll help you guys out. So with that, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Engstrom. Are there any questions? Senator Dimbrough?
I'll hold it. Let's hear this.
Okay. Mr. Schmidt.
Chair Rayfield, members of the committee, my name is Jerry Schmidt. I'm here representing the Oregon Groundwater Association. Like Rich, I've got a few gray hairs. I've been here over 25 years. It was interesting yesterday listening to the testimony of the director. I think in all my years of listening to Ways and Means, that's probably the most direct, to-the-point presentation I've witnessed. It was absolutely incredible. It was, you'll be hearing from every agency, and every agency feels that their issues are important, and the difficulty you guys have as listening to all this testimony is where do you sift the wheat from the shaft and to make sure what's being presented to you is an accurate presentation. And I believe the director and the agency made a good presentation to you, adequately showing you where the issues were. Our organization, men and women in the groundwater industry, use this agency along with a host of others. Unlike Rich, who their folks, that's the primary agency that they're dealing with, they deal with many others as well. Our principal agency is the Water Resources Department, but we deal with DSL, Dogami, you name it, virtually every state agency we touch on. Part of the issue for our scientific folks is we got to have raw data that we can use that's dependable, unbiased, and straight to the point. And that's one of the good things that we've always considered Dogami a scientific-based organization, and one that gives us straight facts. And when our consultants and our hydrogeologists look at things, they can use that information and translate that information into usable data that their clients can use. We've long been a supporter of trying to get data in front of not only our folks, but the general public. And we sponsored a bill back in 1993 from the Water Resources Department that used $700,000 of a dedicated fund to actually move data from the raw data paper form to a digital format so that the general public can utilize this information. it's extremely critical in this agency's point of view that they need to not only get the information to some of the folks that are using it, but to the general public. They made a concerted effort to do that. They are still trying to disseminate information, and I would strongly support funding to encourage that agency to further disseminate information so that all that information is available in a digital format and available to everyone. I don't have much more. I want to just comment briefly that I did listen to Chair Devlin yesterday make some comments about a two-year budget. I would echo those comments. It's absolutely essential for an agency to have a two-year budget. If you're making a one-year budget, it doesn't give any kind of longevity to the folks that are affected by a one-year budget. So I would strongly recommend a two-year budget, and with some budget notes, if you feel so inclined, to try and make a look at the funding levels. And Mr. Angstrom stated here earlier that his folks are willing to look at that whole issue and see if you can come out with something that be a longer-term stable funding. With that, I have nothing further. I've submitted written testimony, and that's in the record. So with that, I thank you very much, and maybe won't be seeing you again, but I'm getting grayer and grayer as we go along, so it's ending into my twilight years. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Are there any questions for these gentlemen? Senator Hansel?
I was intrigued, Mr. Angstrom, with your testimony about maybe there is, I think I heard, I was extrapolating that maybe there is some way for a funding source if we could somehow tap into the mineral exploration and results of that back to the department that helped create that. You know, I sure hope that we could, that might be a way. An additional funding source. I mean, if we're relying upon their data, we want to keep that data coming, that maybe figure out some way to benefit the department that's helping to do the exploration. So I'd really like us to pursue that person.
Chair Rayfield, Senator Hansel, you know, the reality is that they've done such a good job of picking up grants that they've been able to, you know, support the whole program, one, through really some sound business practices. But as those go away, the department is just going to have to look to reinvent itself. And we think the best opportunity, especially in your district, your Senate district and south of you, that mining opportunities is one of those places that the department can focus on, not only just identifying the resources, but how really advocating and helping attract companies to come in and take advantage, you know, of some of those resources over there. And that's not that we're asking that it won't be in an environmentally friendly way or anything like that, but with that comes fees, because of the production that they're going to be bringing in. And then to entice that, I would be proposing, at least for our membership and then, you know, into the work group, that we figure out how we can support that through some of the fee collection system at the MLR program. I got to find the balance point with my members on that. But that's the opportunity that we have to try to support the agency. And I think our industry would like to support the agency, even if the fees aren't directly involved with the MLR program right away, because the interest of preserving it as, you know, in its structure. So it's going to be an interesting conversation.
Chair. Yes, Representative Hack.
Thank you, Chair. And this may be more of a question for the director, but when we talk about sustaining Dogami and the work that they do, they also, my understanding in meeting with them, you know, there's a lot of services that they provide for counties and cities and things that those entities would have to either contract that work out, or they've got to have the work done somehow. So is there possibly an opportunity that there could be a fee for service and that regard. I mean, common sense tells me that you'd have to pay for those services. So if Dogami is providing the service, it's something that those entities would have to pay for if Dogami wasn't there. So is it fair to say that there could be a fee for service in that regard as well?
Well, I can get Chair Rayfield, before the director comes up, if she wants to answer that, and Representative Hack. You know what I would say to that is they do a product that might be marketable, but who it's going to be marketable to is local governments. And you think about the hazards program that they have with landslides and tsunamis and earthquakes and things of that nature. It really is represent Gomberg's you know, kind of district area, you know, all the way up up and down the coast is where a lot of this work's going to be.
The disastrous district.
Yeah, the disaster districts.
These districts are disastrous, what you're saying?
Oh, well, trust me, when it comes, your districts are going to be in worse shape than ours are.
And there is, you know, there's always this tension of how you pass on some things that are general fund that is appropriately general fund because, you know, whole communities and areas benefit versus those that are more specific, that are more easily targeted. The one thing I would say is the folks that would probably benefit from most of that are going to be the counties and the cities and things like that. And it is a little bit of charging government fees for government purposes, and it's just a doesn't matter. It's just shifting dollars around in the same pot from, you know, my perspective. But that's the inherent push and tug on general fees, general fund and fees all the time. And I personally think from my side as I've been around this that those hazards programs really should be general fund programs for the most part. The department's just done a wonderful job bringing in other resources. But you think about it, I mean, just think about one tsunami and what it could possibly do to the whole coastal region. And if we don't have a prepared program and understand what's going to happen, that's going to cost a lot of lives. And that's worth general fund investment, in my view.
Senator Dimbrough.
Yeah, thanks, Mr. Rayfield. Mr. Angstrom, I really appreciate the thoughtful nature of your comments. And, you know, the issue, you know, obviously, we don't want to put the agency in a position where they're being accused of lowering their standards in order to attract more mining exploration because they benefit from that. I know you know that. And I know the agency knows that. Last year, we had a work group from the Environment Committee, Policy Committee, that was looking at some sort of coordinated permitting process, a way to come up with permitting where it would be more efficient, more coordinated, and you know, where we could have a more comprehensive permitting process for the state. And, you know, one of the models that we looked at was actually that gold mine process mm-hmm. that you're mm-hmm. referring to, where it's a long process, but very comprehensive and, you know, really brought in all the stakeholders. And, you know, what comes out of it, aside from a sense of exhaustion, is a sense of, you know, that, yeah, the due diligence has been done. And I think, you know, if you want to, you know, I think what Oregonians are going to need to feel is that, yes, you know, the mining, a mining project will do really good things for the economy, but, you know, without doing, you know, anything deleterious to the environment, right, or just in a very limited kind of way. And, you know, we're going to really need, I mean, you know, what do we know, right? You know, we need the expertise of an agency that we can trust to, you know, to help us to see, okay, this is not going to have an overwhelming environmental impact. And, you know, so if we're going to find that place between saying, you know, heck no to any kind of mining project and, you know, wild, wild west, you know, what is something that can be a sustainable approach to mining? Mm-hmm. You got to have an agency that you can really believe in.
And is independent.
Yeah.
Co-Chair Rayfield and Senator Dembrough, excellent question. We are watching that Calico process, and we think for a threshold mine site, maybe not the little ones, but a threshold mine site that brings an economy, you know, a number of employees or an economic base to it, that kind of regional solutions approach is the way to go. And the reason for that is what I think is the barrier to and what the perception of why mining interests don't want to come to the state is the layers of government processes that are on mining right now. Almost every natural resource agency has their finger in it, and that's just the state. Then you have the local governments have to go through their process, and then the feds have to go through their process. And it just is too much for folks and businesses to feel like there's a certain outcome with all of those variables in play. The regional solutions approach, which is what Calico is running with, brings all of those interests together. And I often say, set your environmental standards. Let's have high environmental standards because we got a great state and we want to protect it. But give me one rigorous process, and that's it. And get the right. And the big thing is hiring the right people. You know, we can't just go out and hire NRS-1s and expect them to handle a complicated mine site. You got to have an NRS-5 type of guy that really knows the issue. And I'm willing to pay for that if I can get the one rigorous process. So, excellent point. I'm with you completely.
Any follow-up?
All right. Thank you very much. Is there anybody else that would like to testify? All right, with that, we'll close the public hearing. And is there anything else for the good of the order? All right, seeing none, we'll adjourn the meeting.